inside my head.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for staying with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106. Time permitting, we will get to your text at the end of the program. Coming up Monday on the program, real quick, State Senator David Sessions making his, every other month or so, we get Senator Sessions on. Dale Jackson, some guy they gave a radio show up in Huntsville. And then one of our Monday regulars, State Representative Shane Stringer, scheduled to be with us. So make sure you tune in for that. But joining us now, we do this every Friday, who I call our returning champion of this program, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to be back in South Baldwin County after a couple of days in Montgomery.
Just the party, the show goes on forever and the party never ends in Montgomery because, we're a long way from session and it's been a long time since session, but you're still being drawn into the throes of state government.
The most underrated or committees ever are the joint interim committees that go on and on throughout the year that you have to get up there to do the people's business on. So it never ends.
Well, let's start here and we'll get into the meandering nature of business of Montgomery in a moment. Just your immediate reaction to the redistricting maps. And I want to say this. You know, we may or may not like the way they split Mobile up, but all of a sudden, Baldwin County is now the population center, it appears, of what will be likely the first congressional district.
Well, before we get into the practical side of this, I think it's worth taking a moment to look at the logic that was used behind this and, frankly, how offensive it should be. I mean, the special master said that districts were tested to determine how often the black preferred candidate would win elections in those districts. Think about that, the black preferred candidate. And apparently the federal courts have moved right past racial gerrymandering and now are purporting to draw lines based on what they think black people are going to do. They're reading the black people's minds and then drawing a district so that what they think they're going to do can be reflected in the outcome of an election. And that is the most patently offensive thing and un-American thing I can think of. It's absurd.
Yeah, and man, I tell you, I tried to give these guys the benefit of the doubt, but what was the thing that really broke it for me was they split Selma and Montgomery up into two congressional districts, and it just looks so obvious they're protecting Terry Sewell's congressional district. Are protecting Terry Sewell with that congressional district that you really have to question, you know, or were they really trying to do something in the name of racial equality, or is this just about adding Democrats to the roster of the House in Washington?
Well, it clearly is the latter, and one thing I've learned in politics is sometimes things are exactly what they seem, and now's one of those times. It's exactly what it looks like. And the problem is this exact situation is going to be repeated a dozen times across the country in other states, and we're going to see a significant change in the makeup of the U.S. House of Representatives because of judicial interference. The federal judiciary will change the makeup of a different branch because of this decision, and that's why it's so important. But to get to your point about Baldwin County, yes, Baldwin County is the big dog in this district now, and it certainly has the most population when you look at it, and is very influential because in a Republican primary, it votes heavily Republican. And I'll say right now, I think Jerry Carl's doing a great job in that seat. He doesn't live in Baldwin County yet, although he's invited. And I think he will continue to do a great job representing Baldwin County and the entire first congressional district, whatever it looks like in Congress.
That would be a scoop right there. Former Mobile County Commissioner flees to Baldwin County, but I would think he's probably just following the trend there, but that's a discussion for another time. Senator,
he can move in next to Best Rich.
hey, there indeed really is a trend there. I suppose. Something else. I want to get your thoughts on, we haven't talked a whole lot about it, you and I, but I've spent some time on the show. This library stuff, and the reason I guess it matters, I'm eager to hear what you have to say, because two of the libraries are always in the discussion, Foley and Fairhope, right there in your district. You see what's going on. I don't know there's much the state or the legislature can do, but as far as it goes, it falls on the local governments. But just a lot of people concerned, I guess, is the word about what's in their public libraries.
So you're right, and the question is not is there something the state can do, but is there something the state should do? And I think the answer is probably no. I'm a small government, limited government, government that's closest to the people is the best kind of government type of guy. And so I think that responsibility falls squarely on local governments, the mayors, the city councils, the county commissions to deal with this issue. And I'm as frustrated about it as anybody is. But I'll tell you right now, if you are a mayor in Alabama and you are struggling with how to deal with what's in your library, I will give you Tony Kennan's cell phone number, and he will tell you how to deal with that, because this is the kind of stuff you do not see in Orange Beach. You're not going to see it in Orange Beach, and I think you and I both know you don't have to worry about seeing it in Orange Beach. So if you're a mayor in anywhere in Alabama and this is something that's plaguing you, I can get you to somebody who will tell you how to get it fixed.
But, like, here in Fairhope, people, like, every single city council meeting line up to protest the library down the street, and they hear this from their elected city officials, there's nothing we can do about it. And that seems to be the trend in Foley, as he's been thinking a little bit in Ozark and North Shelby County, Madison. I mean, all over the state where these people have problems with their library, they're being told by their city government, well, I know we don't disagree, but it's not really up to us.
Most, if not all, libraries are funded heavily by a municipality or the county in which they reside. Those boards that oversee the library's administration are usually appointed by local elected officials, and whether that's the city council, the mayor, or a county commission. And what you do is you go to that board and say, if you'd like to continue to serve on the board, you're going to reflect the values of this community. And it's just that simple. And if you're not going to, then we're going to replace you and we're going to move on. This is not complicated. And I understand that it's politically, it's a touchy issue. But when you have appointing authority, and I used to have that when I was on the county commission, that makes you ultimately responsible for what that board is doing and how it is, whatever the entity is being administered. And that's how we want it, so that the elected officials are in charge, because they every 4 years go to the voters and ask for a job performance review. And that's where the voters, that's how that power should work. The voters should say, this is what we want done. The elected officials should listen to them. Or if there's some reason they can't do it, they should explain why. But they should get it done. And that's how that power works, and that's how municipalities and county commissions that oversee these libraries should act.
And it's not necessarily this. It's not a thing of where the city government would be violating the First Amendment. And these activists are conflating the two, that by telling librarians what to do, or somebody with a library science degree that knows better than you mouth-breathing rubes out there, what books we're going to have in the library, versus they're not like outright banning the books. It's just more of I guess like an organizational thing, right? Like, but no one's making that point, or at least they've been unable to, it seems.
Yeah, at the end of the day, the administration of these libraries, again, is up to local electeds. That's what books are there, what kind of shelves they're on, how high they are, what room certain kind of books are in or not in. I mean, that's not something I think you want the state legislature involved in, But it's absolutely the responsibility of local governments. And to say that they don't have the ability to do that is just flat wrong. I mean, it just is. Again, you know, go see how they do in Orange Beach, and I can promise you you're not going to run into any of that crap down there.
We're joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. Senator, let's get to this. I think that sound you're hearing, it's the bell tolling for the massage therapy board. Sunset Committee yesterday, walk us through what's going on there. And I think this is part of a bigger thing, or this is one of the symptoms, just the regulation, if you will, the red tape in government.
You're exactly right. I mean, who would have ever thought we would have spent this much time on the state licensure board for massage therapy? But it was very much the canary in the coal mine, if you will. Hey, these problems, what's going on here with this board? What are the problems here? And you start seeing these pervasive, really administrative management problems that are in these occupational boards throughout the state. And we have over 100 of them, and they impact a huge, almost 25% of the state's entire population is licensed by one of these boards. And you start seeing really systemic, pervasive management issues that are a creature of how the legislature set them up, really in silos with very little accountability. Except for this Sunset Committee, which I will give credit to its chairman, Senator Will Barfoot from Pike Road, and of course the co-chair, the House co-chair is Margie Wilcox from down our way. But they have done a really good job taking a committee that never really looked in thoroughly or questioned enough the activities of some of these boards, and instead said, "No, we're going to roll up our sleeves. We're going to get into this." I don't sit on that committee, but I've been very involved with its work, and I was observing the other day that every committee member was present, and that shouldn't shock us, but at the same time, you and I both know on these interim committees in the off-season, a lot of times there's not a bunch of people there, but every single committee member was there. Everybody was present. Everybody was doing their work, and it really watching out for the people of the state of Alabama. They've decided to recommend the sunset of the massage therapy board. That is a nuclear option. That is taking the board and dissolving it and starting over. And I think that is a message to all the other boards and commissions out there, especially these little ones run by private, third parties that are doing this type of stuff, to straighten up or we're going to dissolve the entire board.
Senator, one more thing here, and you and I spent a lot of time on this one, but your contract for you dust up earlier this month, the hold, and Senator Roberts trying to find, I think, some kind of resolution here, but not having much success. ALDOT not really forthcoming with any certainty about the West Alabama corridor. Representative England of Tuscaloosa says, well, you're going to tie up my pet project. We're going to tie up everything. Any reason for optimism, or we're just going to let this contract review thing go its course?
Look, the purpose of contract review is to shine light on issues and problems that need additional attention. It's certainly serving its purpose in this case. Had a good conversation with ALDOT this week. Here are the two things that came out of it. One, they have no budget for this project. I asked them what the cost is. They won't tell me. I asked them what the budget is, and they said they don't know. They intend to finance it this way, and they think they've got enough money available. I said, whoa, a budget is not the same as how much room do you have left on your credit card. You need to tell me what you're willing to spend on this road. What have you budgeted for this? Basically, they referred me to the governor's office, and I've asked those questions to the governor's office, but we have no budget for a $1.5 billion project or more that we're about to start on, and the governor's office and the Department of Transportation has never set a budget for it. Part two, they are not using FHWA permitting, which means that even if the federal government was able to provide money to help us with this project, we couldn't use it on this project. And that is disturbing, that the State Department of Transportation is going down a path that when you have, you know, what appears to be a contested race in that district in Congress, you have Senator Britt saying she's supportive of the project and it's clearly proven to be an effective appropriator, that the state is saying, we don't want any federal money, we'll do it ourselves. And I think that is a damn shame.
Well, get back to, like, your interaction with the governor's office. Everybody's interaction is this: hey, how much is this project going to cost? And it's like, thank you for reaching out. The governor's really excited about this project. She's looking forward to doing more in the future, ! And it's like, how much is this project going to cost? And they're never going to give us an answer on this, are they?
They don't seem to, and you have to start wondering about how much governing is going on if they won't answer a simple question about what's your budget for this huge project. And the problem is people like you and me are trying as hard as we can to get answers out of these folks, and then we end up with a situation like we do with prisons. What's the budget for this project? Oh, whatever it needs to be. I mean, who could possibly think that is a responsible way to govern and a responsible way for budgeting? Forget the particulars of should we build this road or not, or should this prison, whatever. You got to start with some understanding of your finances before you just go say, we're going to spend all we possibly can without regard for value or efficiency or anything else. We'll just spend it all until we don't have any more, and that's when we'll know we're done.
Well, and we get you out of here on this, and I've had conversations with your colleague Senator Orr about this. The way the state is doing construction projects and the way some of these contractors may be operating in bad faith with their initial estimate and what it ends up being, does this construction management model leaves that wiggle room there for things like this to happen? Does the state need to do something to fix this?
The state absolutely should be more involved in that and should be looking at what's working within this delivery method and what's not. That's the governor's job. That's the governor's responsibility, and she's not doing it.
Well, to be continued. Senator, we got to leave it there. We will talk again soon. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, sir. Y'all enjoy the nice weather.
State Senator Chris Elliott there on the line. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
He said some things just glitter and shine.